This is what we're doing at the moment. We're working in this series, Who Are We? Which is a whopping big question. One of those huge questions we ask. Really, it's the question, what is a human? Which is a gigantic one to think and dwell on. And as you know, this topic this week, mainly good or mainly bad, and Jamie's already pointed out that that's his number. So as we go through, text through your questions, we usually can't get to all of them, but Jamie will pick some of them and throw them at me. And if you're really new here to all this, good on you for being here. We're so glad you're here with us. And I hope what I do right now, you can follow it. And I hope you find it helpful. And I hope it actually helps you think about what you are and who you are and who we are. That's the whole point of this time together. So I hope it's helpful. Mainly good or mainly bad? What do you think? The question is, all of us together, like, who are we? You know, you might be able to think of certain individuals where you can look at, say, the Californian couple that, you know, chained 13 of their kids to their beds, and you look at couples and individuals like that and you think, oh, that's mainly bad. That's pure evil. But think more generally about all of humans, you know. Think about you and your mates and the people you work with and your neighbours and your family and... What about all of us together? What are we? Are we mainly good or are we mainly bad? And the question is mainly, as I think Owen said, no one, I haven't met many people in my life who think that they're perfect. Most people will admit, oh, I make mistakes, you know, I get some things wrong. But what are you mainly, you know? Is there more good in you or more evil in you? The question is not, are you entirely good or completely evil? What are you mainly? Are we primarily and essentially good at the core, sometimes making mistakes? Or are we primarily and essentially bad at the core, with capable of doing good things from time to time? That's the question. It's almost like we need to weigh up the good and the bad, really. Like, picture a whopping big set of scales, and all of the good that's in you and those around you, we'll put that on one side of the scales. And then all of the bad that's in you and the people around you, put that on the other side. What wins? You know, what outweighs what? Does the good outweigh the bad, or does it go the other way? And isn't this fun to just be doing this up here? Or maybe you can think about a piece of fruit. I was looking at a piece of fruit yesterday and I thought, that looks good. You pick up a piece of fruit and it's got some blemishes on the surface. You know, it's got some bruises, some dings, maybe a little hole here and there. And like, what's going on for that piece of fruit? Is it mainly good at the core, a good piece of fruit that's just kind of a bit banged up on the surface by a branch or an ant eating it or something like that, but it's mainly good? Or are those blemishes on the surface symptoms of a deeper problem at the core of the thing? Is it actually rotten in the core? What is a human? Are we mainly good at the core, a bit banged up on the outside, or are we mainly bad and actually rotten and it's a deep issue? It's a bit of an age-old discussion. You know, humans have been asking this question and talking about it right through history, and if you can actually look back through literature, you see a lot of people wrestling with it. Put your hands up if you've ever read that book, The Lord of the Flies. That's good, a lot of you. Put your hand up if you're thinking, I was probably meant to read the book, The Lord of the Flies, at high school. There you go, there's an honest one. The Lord of the Flies is written about 60 years ago by a guy named William Golding, and it's a pretty simple story, it's a pretty cool story. I've read it a couple of times. A bunch of young schoolboys get deserted on an island without adults or teacher supervision, and they just get left to their own devices. But quite quickly, things kind of descend and spiral into tribalism and violence and anarchy. And by the time some adults do rock up on the island, I think it's only like a week later, the whole island is on fire and they're killing each other. All right? Most people think William Golding wrote that book as somewhat of a commentary on what he thinks about society and really the problem with society. I think that's the case. William Golding writes that book. It's a novel, but he writes that book from an assumption, and the assumption is we're mainly bad. And if you remove the restraints and the authority of society, and particularly even from the younger, more innocent ones in our society, what will emerge actually is the true nature, and it's horrific. Most people also think that William Golding was writing that novel in response to a novel that was written about 100 years earlier. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, a novel called Coral Island. And it's a very similar kind of novel, similar kind of story, opposite result. A guy named Ballantyne writes that. Similar kind of story, a group of young people get deserted on an island, but without the restrictions of society and the restraints of corrupting influence, they flourish and they kind of form this utopian community. And you can see the assumption he writes that book from, can't you? He's making a commentary there about what he thinks about people, that really they're mainly good. And if you could just free us up from the constraints and the restrictions of the oppression of religion and institutions and all that kind of stuff, if you just free us up, we'd flourish as people. They're two pretty opposing ideas, aren't we? But basically, it's just whether you think people are mainly good or mainly bad. It's an age-old discussion. Now, we asked about 700 people on the coast around us what they think, whether they think their people are mainly good or bad. And here's the results that we got. So I'll get you to flick that one up if you can. There they are. So 50% of people who we asked think that people are mainly good. But look at that, 32%. That's a good chunk, isn't it? 32% of people say, no, we're mainly bad. I don't know what's going on. For the people, maybe they had one of those a week, you know, where people in their family or looking around the world, they come to the conclusion, no, people are mainly bad. There's also others. People had different ideas about what's going on, and there's 2% of people think we're both mainly good. Didn't understand the question, really. You can't be both mainly good. Anyway, so that is interesting. I think what that shows is it's a real wrestle. You know, but it's not an easy thing to get your head around. People will probably flip in their thinking about this. Maybe you flipped in your thinking. But it does show us who wins, doesn't it? Like the biggest chunk of people, the majority of people around us think that we are essentially good natured. There's more good in us than evil. We're mainly good. We've just got the capability to sometimes do bad things and make mistakes, but that's kind of drifting away from our core position as good people. And as I think about that position, I've got to admit, I can see how the majority of people around us conclude that we're mainly good. I can see how people conclude that. I mean, you look around and you see, don't you? You see people doing some amazingly good things. You do. In our country, every year we've got the Australians of the Year, and there's all subcategories within that. One of them that I love the most is the local heroes category. And there's hundreds of nominations that come in for local heroes, which are just people who have, you know, just showed incredible kindness in their community, helping others around them. People who spend years of their life sacrificing in really heroic ways and selfless ways to help others around them. People do amazingly kind things. Internationally, we acknowledge it with like the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, the Mother Teresa's out there and the Warburg medals that we award. There's a lot of awards we give because there's a lot to acknowledge, actually. People do wonderful things. And if you just sit back and think about yourself and the people in your life, maybe you'll notice this as well. People generally, I think, do attempt to love each other and help each other and be kind to each other. Think about what happens in most communities when there's a sudden death, and particularly a tragic death of a young person. Typically, everybody rallies support around the grieving family, and they start foundations and crowdfunding to try to raise money for research or to try to make sure this tragic accident doesn't happen again. That's usually what happens. Or if a natural disaster wipes out a community, like a flood or a bushfire comes flying through, typically community spirit emerges and everyone talks about it. You know, people pull together and they really do help each other out. When minority groups are mistreated in our country, usually there's some level of outcry by someone in the general public and there are attempts to kind of rectify what's going on. And my guess would be you work pretty hard you work pretty hard if you've got a family to kind of provide for and care for and look after them, and that comes at a great cost to you. And when you start noticing all this in people around you, I think it's actually easy to conclude that all those types of things come from essentially good-natured people who are good at the core. I see how people come to that conclusion. And when there are mistakes and slip-ups, it's easy to kind of think, well, that's just due to these external factors in my life that's kind of mucking up my mainly good life. You know, sometimes it's my family. I think, you know, if only I got a little bit more love and affection when I grew up, then I wouldn't behave like this, you know. Or, you know, maybe if I wasn't brought up with the prejudices that I got off my dad, then maybe I wouldn't do these kinds of things. So it's kind of their fault. Or we think maybe it's the education system, it failed me, you know. I end up being left a bit disadvantaged, you know, compared to others. We blame that. We can blame institutions and governments that, you know, they've taken advantage of the weak and the vulnerable. Or we kind of point at religions and say they're just too harsh and they're too restrictive. And because of those factors, that's where my problems come from, you know. And if we could just fix those things, if we could just fix the influences and the corrupting factors that kind of come and hammer on us as essentially good people, then we'd all be able to improve and flourish. And I reckon that is the current mood of our society at the moment. There's a huge amount of optimism and positivity, and we can do this and we can make a difference. There's moral campaigners left, right and centre campaigning to get rid of evil and weed it out, like the Me Too campaign. I can see how the majority of people easily end up concluding that we're mainly good. And the problem really is these other factors that we've got to sort out. But what if we're wrong? What if our assessment of ourselves is wrong? And after all, that's what we're talking about, aren't we? Self-assessment. And I've got to say, it's actually easy to be wrong about yourself if you're trying to assess what you're really like. Have you ever done that before? I'll give you an example. I tend to think I'm a pretty likable person, but recently I discovered I'm not actually that likable, right? I got a present for Christmas, this Christmas just gone by, from somebody here in this church, actually. They'll remain nameless because I don't want them to be affected in any way. I got a present, and as I opened up that present from this person who I thought liked me, right? I pull it out and it's a coffee mug, right? And I'm just going, a coffee mug? Really? Is that what you think of me? I thought you liked me, a coffee mug? But it wasn't just a coffee mug, it was what was on the coffee mug, all right? I open up the coffee mug. On one side, it's actually got something quite nice. It says, Jesus loves you, right? I'm like, oh, I guess that's okay. Coffee mug, Jesus loves you. But you flip the coffee mug around, and on the other side it says, but the rest of us think you're a loser. Oh, it's like, I know. It's like, what, really? So, you know, I just went to bed and cried myself to sleep on my pillow. No, actually, I laughed super hard. It was like, it's probably a really good gift to give someone like me who thinks everyone does love me and, you know, brings me back down to earth a little bit. I laugh so hard. You know when you laugh that hard, you belly laugh and you end up, your cheeks are sore and your gut's sore because you're like, anyway, that was really good. You can get yourself wrong. Your assessment of yourself can be way off. Now, on a more serious note, the problem with self-assessment is this. It's actually impossible to analyze yourself objectively because you're in yourself. You're inside of yourself. And what that means is if you try to assess yourself, you will be impacted and influenced by your own desires for what you'd like to be and how you'd like to see yourself. The classic example of that is the self-assessment personality profile test. Have you ever done one of them? The personality profile quiz or test where you answer a bunch of questions about yourself. If you're in this situation, do you normally stay quiet or speak up? And you're in that situation and you basically assess yourself. I did one the other day. There's lots of free ones. I did one the other day, answered or banged through all the questions and got to the end, got the result. And then I found myself going, hang on, did I answer those questions like objectively? Is that what I'm really like? Or did I just answer those questions that's what I'd like to think of myself? Or is that what I'd like to be like? It's almost impossible to objectively assess yourself. You know, a more accurate form of assessment is you get everyone around you to assess you at the same time. Have you ever done one of them? They're really scary. They call it the 360 review, where you get a couple of peers to assess you. You get someone in leadership over you to assess you. You get someone that you're in leadership of. Everyone assesses at the same time and you pull it all together. I did one a few years back. It's the most frightening experience of my life, right? Because you're like, and it's far more accurate. You actually see closer to the truth. But I still don't think you see the truth, because I think people pull back on giving you the brutal truth because they don't want you to be crushed. So I ask this question: how can we receive objective, accurate assessment of ourselves? Who is able to share with us the real truth about who we are and what we're like? You know where I'm going with this, don't you? Surely if there is a God who made us and all things, and we've looked at that over the previous weeks, surely if there is a God who made us and he did it intentionally, he designed us for a purpose, and as he did that, he actually defined for us what is essentially good and what is essentially bad. Surely he is best placed, is he not, to be the one who assesses us and tells us objectively what is going on for us. And if that's the case, the best thing we need to do is to ask, God, what do you think of us? What would he say to us? How would God respond and interact with a bunch of people, the majority of whom think that they're mainly good? Imagine if we could have the living God step into this moment with us and just clear this up for us. Well, good news, that's exactly what we do have. We have the living God able to step into this moment with us in his word, his living, breathing word, and give us accurate, objective assessment. Those two passages that we just had read before, if you're new to all these things, we're reading a historical record of how God responds to people. And in these two little interactions, what we've got is Jesus, check it out, we've got Jesus interacting with a mob of people who think that they are mainly good. So you've got Jesus speaking to a bunch of people just like us, who easily come to the conclusion that we're mainly good. This is going to be helpful for us. So come to Mark chapter 7. Pull out that piece of paper or open up your Bibles, and let me give you a little bit of background here. The mob that Jesus is speaking to, and Owen shared this with us, I want to call them the mainly good mob. Yep. Historically here, they're Pharisees and teachers of the law. Why are they thinking that they're mainly good? Well, they're following religious rituals. There's these ceremonial washings of hands and cups and jugs that they do. They eat only clean food, and they do all that symbolically to be saying to God and proving to God that they are clean and right with God and good before him. You know, and they've come to the conclusion that because they're performing well, keeping the rules, ticking the boxes, religious rituals, they're confident that they are mainly good. The mainly good mob. Now, you might hear that and kind of go, oh, but hang on, Tim, I'm not a religious person. That's not me. Well, can I just give you the modern-day non-religious version? Because this is you. The modern-day non-religious version is just the good bloke or the good chick, the good person. The person who, when they sit back and they analyze themselves, they think, yeah, I'm performing well. I don't do it perfectly, but I'm performing well. I'm working hard. I'm paying my bills and my taxes. I'm doing my community service. I'm helping my neighbours. I'm looking after my family. I'm not doing anybody particularly any real harm at all. I'm not trying to kill anyone around me. I'm a basically good person. When I do slip up, I usually kind of feel like it's because of the circumstance I was in. It was really hard and tricky, and that's why I reacted like that. You know, I only went off at that person because they pulled me on the traffic and they shouldn't have done that. Or I was unfairly treated at work. That's why I reacted like that. But really, I'm not to blame. The problem's outside of me. That's the same as what Jesus is speaking to here. You might be that modern day non-religious person, but you're kind of in that mainly good mob thinking. Slightly different reason, same conclusion. I'm mainly good, I'll be okay in the end. And so to this person, to the majority of us, Jesus goes and drops a truth bomb. And it's super uncomfortable, and you wouldn't invite him back to your dinner party next time. And he did it all the time. And it makes people squirm. Let's read from verse 17 there. After he had left the crowd and entered the house with his disciples, sitting there for a dinner party, asked him about his parable. He says, "Are you so dull? Don't you see that nothing that enters a person from outside can defile them, for it does not go into their heart?" I'll just pause there. Jesus is saying this. There's nothing that can come into you from outside of you that will actually corrupt you and defile you completely. It's not the external influences that come in and cause you to make mistakes and do dumb things and slip up. That's not the cause of your problems. And then Jesus diagnoses the problem. And I think he's kind of basically saying, folks, I've got some bad news. You're not as good as you think you are. In fact, you're far worse than you ever imagined. The problem's not out there somewhere, external to you, coming in and corrupting you, because external things can't get to your heart. And that's actually where the problem is. There's a corruption within you, in the very core of your being. The problem is internal. And this is where your mistakes and slip-ups and balls-ups come from. They originate from within. Look at verse 21. For it is from within. The number 21 is on the top of the previous line. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, thief, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance and folly. It's exhausting reading that list. It's so hectic. All these evils come from inside. This has got to be one of the most uncomfortable things to hear about yourself. You do things and make mistakes, small and sometimes really big, not simply because of external influences. In fact, you make them because of something going on that's wrong inside of you. Jesus says here it's evil thoughts. It's evil desires. That's where your sexual immorality comes from. It comes from in here. All these evils come from inside. Now, if you take a little bit of a moment to have an honest reflection about yourself, which I don't suggest is an easy thing to do very often, do you ever find yourself doing things or saying things or thinking things and you shock yourself and you go, oh my goodness, where did that come from? Our initial reaction will be to actually blame something external to ourselves. You raise your voice, go off your head, get all heated up, and you're like, oh, where did that come from? I'm normally very pleasant. Your first reaction would be, yes, I did see my father do that from time to time. That's where it comes from. Jesus goes, nah, that came from inside of you. That's yours. You find yourself ripping shreds off someone behind their back. And you're like, oh my goodness, I never do that kind of thing. And you think, well, maybe it's because I've watched it in movies or something like that. And Jesus goes, nah, that's you. You want to tear people down so you can lift yourself up. You find yourself ripping someone off, taking too much change, cheating on your taxes. And you look and you think, well, there's got to be a reason why I've done this. And Jesus goes, no. That came from inside of you, the desire to steal. That's yours. You own that. You find yourself at a real crippling point where you need to acknowledge addictions. You're addicted to substances, you're addicted to alcohol, you're addicted to pornography. I don't know, but you just can't stop. There's something absolutely wrecking you. And your temptation will be to go, oh, it's the advertising. Oh, it's the society I live in. Oh, it's the exposure that I've had. Jesus goes, no, that's you. That's in you. What's coming out? That's coming from your rotten core. You see, normally law-abiding, mainly good citizens in a department store and the lights get flicked off and the majority of them just start stealing things. Or you see a whole city where there's a blackout for a good amount of time across whole city blocks and thousands of people just start looting. And we go, where did that come from? Jesus goes, yeah, that's in all of you. The truth is we are all very capable of horrendous things given the right circumstance because the problem's in here. Jesus's diagnosis is devastating. He says your hearts are corrupted. You're mainly bad. Not mainly good. You're mainly bad. Now, as Jesus drops truth bombs like that on people, as you can imagine, didn't always go down too well. And maybe as you hear this tonight, it's not sitting well with you. And it wouldn't be a surprise to me at all if you've got all kinds of things kind of welling up in you, going, just crossing the arms of your heart right now, going, no way. There's no way I'm mainly bad. It's actually no surprise, really, that Jesus became quite unpopular and people wanted to kill him. And they did kill him in the end. Because what he's saying here is not flattering at all. And people prefer to be flattered. We would just far prefer to hear nice things about ourselves and we easily believe nice things about ourselves. But you know, what we really need is not flattery. We need the truth. We need reality. Even though it's not pleasant, even though it's super uncomfortable to face and live with, we need the truth. Now, you might be someone who instead goes, no, I'm going to choose to stick with my own self-assessment of myself because I'd rather be positive and optimistic about the future. But if what God is saying here is true, that you're actually corrupted to the core, you can't trust your own assessment of yourself. It's going to be flawed. You're going to get it wrong. And so you're going to be stuck in a state of delusion about yourself. What about this instead? What about having the courage to face the truth about who you really are? I don't think it's an easy thing to do. You might be sitting there going, playing the yeah but game. Talked about this one before, haven't I? You hear Jesus say, you're corrupted at the core, the problem's inside of you, it's your heart. You're busted up more than you can imagine. That's where it's all coming from. And you go, yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, but I just want to go see a movie. Yeah, but I'd prefer to think well about myself. I like to identify as a, you know, and this day and age, we're in this mindset where we feel like it's okay to just define your own truth for yourself. Are you playing the yeah, but game? Yeah, but I'm hearing you, but I still don't think I'm that bad. I know, mate, I'm not that bad. If you're doing that right now, and please be honest with me, if that's what's going on in your heart, I'm not that bad, just own this. What you're saying is, I disagree with what Jesus is saying here. Yeah? What you're saying is, no, Jesus is wrong and I'm right. And what you're actually saying by that is, no, God, you're wrong, and I'm right. And I'd prefer to decide for myself what is truth, and I prefer autonomy, and I prefer self-determination. Is that what's going on for you? Are you feeling the urge to just go, no, I'm going to define truth for myself? And if that is what is going on for you right now, and you can even feel it happening as I'm talking, friends, this is actually at the very heart of the core of the problem. This illustrates what's going on. Because if you find yourself going, I just don't want to hear from you, God, I don't agree. You're rejecting your maker. And that is, friends, the biggest symptom of the core of the problem. You don't want him. You don't want to hear from him. You see, it's one thing to fail to love people. It's another thing altogether to fail to love God and listen to God and respect God and obey God. when a man came to Jesus, he said, what's the definition of good? What's the biggest thing we need to be living for? What's it all about? Jesus goes, oh, I'll tell you. The first and greatest commandment is this: you love the Lord your God with all of your heart and all of your mind and all of your soul and all of your strength. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And we love to focus on that one, and we ought to focus on that one, but we blow this one massively and we don't even know we're blowing it. That's the big problem. We all fail to do this one, to love God and obey him and respect him completely. You might feel like you've treated other people around you well, and you may have treated people around you quite well, but how have you treated God? You might be able to fool yourself into thinking you've been good towards everyone around you, but the big issue, have you been completely good towards him? Or have you rejected him? See, it's one thing to zoom in on a person and see how they relate to other people. It's another thing to kind of zoom back and see how they're relating to the God of the universe. It's kind of like this. You see a boat out on the sea, and you pull out your binoculars to see what's going on with the boat. And you zoom right in on your binoculars, right into the deck of the ship to see the people on the deck of the ship. And they're busy, and they're working together. They're climbing the rigging, and they're pulling on the ropes and scrubbing the deck. And I don't know what else they do on boats, but they're doing things like that, right? And they're working together, and you're zooming in on them, and you're going, oh, look at all these good people working hard together. Aren't they wonderful? But then you zoom back, and you see it's actually a pirate ship heading in the direction to commit another horrendous crime against, you know what I mean? Here's what's going on for us. You can zoom in on a person and see, oh, they're doing okay, they're living all right. But you zoom back and see how all of us are treating our God, and you see the real picture. You see the real problem. You see the offense that we're committing towards God. And I tell you what, if you're feeling the urge tonight to actually kind of define for yourself what's true and right without reference to him, actually just ignoring him, then friends, that is the biggest piece of evidence of the real issue of the corruption of your core. And you need to face the truth. And I want to help you face the truth. Because even though this is far worse than you ever thought, there is a wonderful solution that's far better than you ever imagined. And that's the very thing that helps you face the truth, if you know that there's a solution. There's actually amazing, comforting news. However, it only comes through facing the truth about yourself. In the first passage we looked at, Mark chapter 7, Jesus points to the core of the problem. In the second passage, working with a very similar group of people, Jesus actually points us to the solution. So come and have a look at that. Luke chapter 18. Again, he's working with the mainly good mob of people. Verse 9, you know, describes how they came to that conclusion. To some who were confident in their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, you know. So they're just confident in how good they are. Yeah, we're mainly good, they're saying about themselves. Jesus tells a parable, which if you're new to this, it's just a story to make a point. And it's a pretty simple story. It's a story of two men who go to the temple to pray. One of them is confident that he's mainly good. The other one is confident that he's actually mainly bad. Pick it up there with me. Verse 10, two men, Jesus tells this story, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get. How is he? Pretty into himself. Standing there praying, oh, thanking God for how good he is. Thank you, God, I'm not like all those ratbags out there, that I'm not like the people who are mainly bad. I'm not like any of those guys. I'm not like this scumbag tax collector standing up behind me here. I'm the one that fasts every week and I tithe my money. He's just thanking God for being mainly good. He's completely into himself, right? But that's his conclusion, mainly good. But look at the second fella, verse 13. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He wouldn't even look up to heaven. But he beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. So the second guy, the tax collector, he is mainly bad, But the cool thing is, he knows it. He's come to a point where he's been able to accept the fact that he calls himself a sinner. I mean, he's been ripping off his own people. He's a traitor. He's been siding with the enemy. But here he is going, I can admit it. I'm greedy. I'm cheating people. And he's broken. He can see that. He can see actually what he deserves. He knows he's not worthy, which is why he stands at a distance. It's why he can't even look up to God. He's like, I don't think I'm even worthy to look toward God. He beats his chest. He's full of sorrow. And there's genuine repentance going on in this guy. So much so that he cries out, and this is the key, he cries out, Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. Jesus paints the picture of these two men to a group of people who, as they're listening, would be going, yep, cool, Pharisee, mainly good, tick, he's the guy that's all over it. Tax collector, scumbag, yep, no good, no hope for the future. And then Jesus gives a shocking twist at the end of the story, flips the whole thing on its head. Look at verse 14. I tell you, this man, pointing to the tax collector, rather than the other, went home justified before God. And to be justified before God means right with God, good with God, okay for the future, got himself sorted. Jesus goes, the tax collector, the guy who knew he was mainly bad. Jesus is pointing us here to the solution, friends. He's saying, you need to be like this. You need to be like this one. He gets it right. Not meaning go out there and do scumbag things, but simply this, face the truth about yourself. That's what he does. Can you do that? Have you done that? Have you got to the point where you say, I can see the true state and condition of my core. I actually know what I deserve. And I'm going to desperately cry out because I need God's mercy. That's my only hope. Have mercy on me, God. Jesus goes, that's it, guys. Step toward the solution. Face the truth about yourself. Cry out for mercy from God and know this, that our God is the God who comes with abundant mercy through his son Jesus. That's the incredible, amazing news. But if you don't face the truth, you'll never cry out for mercy. Good people don't cry out for mercy. People who think they're mainly good never desperately cry out to God, help me, you're my only hope. If you're mainly good, the best prayer you'll ever pray will just be like, oh God, yeah, help me out a little bit, just need a bit of help, or can you help that person? They're struggling. You'll do prayers like that. Have you ever cried out, God, oh me, I'm the one that needs it. Friends, I might say this now after looking at these passages. We've just had God step into this moment with us through his word and clear this up, haven't we? He's given us a very clear, brutal word about the true state. And the greatest tragedy would be for anybody to actually just press on through life, pretending you hadn't heard this, and go to your death refusing God's word and deluding yourself. Because you will stand before God on that final day. We all will. And you'll either stand before him as someone who got stuck on self-assessment, feeling that you're mainly good and living that way, believing that about yourself, and find yourself receiving the shock of your life on the final day, realizing you made the biggest mistake by not facing the truth and crying out for mercy. Or you can find yourself standing before God on that final day, having accepted his assessment of you, as painful as it is, but allowing that to actually humble you as you face the truth that you're mainly bad, and allowing that to actually cause you to cry out to him for mercy. And you stand before him on that final day actually confident that you've received mercy through Jesus, forgiveness through Jesus, and that'll be a wonderful day for you. There it is. Now I'm going to pause and good on you for listening, and Jamie's going to come on up here and hoping that someone's texted some questions through, and if you haven't, well, you got something.
Got a mic, yeah.
Got a mic.
Yeah. Oh, just as I was running in, buzzing, yep. Heaps coming through, probably 10 or 12, I reckon.
Okay.
We'll try to clump them together.
Sure.
And we'll get through as many as we can, and you call it when you think we need one more.
Okay.
For what it's worth,
gone a bit long, so that's sorry about that. So we'll...
For what it's worth, I don't think you're a loser.
Oh, Thanks, man.
But I'm interested, does Tim, you said the self-audit, self-reflection is hard. Does Tim think Tim can be a loser sometimes?
Oh, pretty regularly, actually.
Good on you for being honest, man. I'm with you. Big count me in for that. First question. So I'll couple this one up. Our God is perfect. Why create us imperfect and broken? And why doesn't God just fix us up already, if that's the case?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, if we're so banged up, why did God make us like this? So it's a really good question. So here's the thing. Your current shape is a shattered version of what you were meant to be. Like, there's still shape of God's original design and intent for you. So you go back to the very beginning and you see God making humanity in his image, which means he makes us perfect. And he makes us to love each other and to love him and to sit humbly under his authority. And it's beautiful to start with. But the first two humans that God made, the representatives of all humanity, our first parents, decided, nah, let's decide for ourselves what's good and what's not good. Let's not listen to God. And in that moment, our being in the image of God gets shattered. So that gets passed on through every generation of humans. So we're all born into this corrupted race, effectively. But there's still the shape of what God intended for us. I say shattered. It's almost like your phone. You know when you've dropped your phone one too many times? You know, it can handle a few drops, can't it? But then there's that fourth or fifth or sixth drop, and you pick it up, and then you look at the screen, it's just shattered. And you're like, oh, you're shattered, right? And then you're like, oh, maybe I can still keep using it, you know, and you put sticky tape on it, or you try and keep it working, and but you're getting splinters in your thumb with glass or whatever. We're like a shattered phone. Actually, probably even worse than a shattered phone. Something's gone on with the operating system. That's the real problem. But we're still, you can still kind of use it. You've got to press four times to get the app to open. And when you're trying to slip, you're getting cut. That's the reality of ours. It's painful. We're banged up. But there's still enough of our shape intact for us to see that we're made intentionally by a God for good things, and we long for that. So, yeah, God didn't make us like this, all banged up. He made us perfect. We banged ourselves up. And then he comes with a solution. So there was a second question attached to that one?
Yeah, why doesn't he fix us up already?
Why doesn't he fix us up already? We have a God whose heart is to fix us up, and that's exactly what he has come to do and will do in completion on the final day. So God looks upon humanity, broken humanity, with compassion. Yeah, he's a just judge, but he looks at us with compassion. So he comes to us, actually enters into the corruption himself. Jesus lives among us. And then he goes to the death and he goes to the cross and dies a death in our place. Takes upon himself our corrupted, rotten cores. Dies with it, deals with it, has a victory over it. So he rises again from the dead. That's a historical fact. He rises again from the dead to show that he has a solution. And then he turns to all of broken humanity and says, I've got mercy and forgiveness for you if you'll face the truth about yourself. I've got it. God is in the business of restoring people. And I'll tell you what, if you're someone who can face the truth and cry out for mercy, God comes with release and freedom for you. He comes with release and freedom from sin in that he frees you from the power of sin. You don't have to be a slave anymore. He comes to live in you and transforms you. And he releases you from the penalty of sin, meaning that he took it for you. So there's no condemnation anymore for you. You can know that on that final day, you can stand confidently before God, forgiven, restored, righteous. That's amazing. So that's exactly what our God's doing. That's the news. Yeah.
There's so many that are similar, but they're all slightly different angles. I'll couple a few more together. Mm-hmm. If God created us, some of these you've kind of already touched on. Mm. If God created us in his image, how can we be mainly bad? New question. If God made us like this, why does he blame us?
Mm-hmm. They're really similar, yep.
Yep. And this person texts through a few, different person here. This is their second text. I guess to the heart of the above question, which is kind of similar, why would a good God create mainly bad people?
Mm. I reckon I've answered that one. Keep going.
Cool. This is a longer one that just came up when I was running up. What would you say to the person who has faced the truth and admits that they are flawed and feels discouraged by the ongoing struggle to overcome those flaws, and despite having asked God for forgiveness and help, lives with a harsh inner critic, do they have to go through life feeling unworthy?
Oh, bless you. You're not alone. Yeah, I mean, we've all got different kind of personalities and dispositions. Some of you are acutely aware of your own failings. You're the opposite end of the spectrum from me, and I need to be aware of you more often, okay? You're the person who wakes up every day, and usually your first thought is a negative one about yourself, yeah? You got to be careful. If your disposition is towards negative thinking about yourself, that's not necessarily understanding what God is saying here. Because sometimes negative thinking about yourself is actually just a false form of pride that you kind of get stuck up in, caught up in. So I would say partly what you're feeling is real, partly what you're feeling maybe just be part of your own brokenness to just beat up on yourself so much. But it's very real. The struggle's real. The struggle's very real. You're not alone. When Jesus comes into your life and begins to live by his Spirit in you and transform you, that's the beginning of the transformation. Wouldn't it be wonderful if the minute Jesus came into your life, everything is just restored? And some people do experience quite spontaneous release from addictions and things. God's able to do that, but it's a different journey for everyone. The minute Jesus comes into your life, you're on a journey. I actually feel more acutely now when I'm in my 40s, I'm more aware of my sin than I've ever been, and I'm more aware of how far I've got to go. And sometimes I'm growing in my ability to despair about my own brokenness, which is a good thing. But I tell you what, I'm confident that God is changing me. He's got me on a trajectory towards where he wants me, and in the end, he will perfect me. And that's the same for you. You trust that he is changing you. He will continue to change you. You work with him in that process. You're not alone. The struggle is real.